The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Hello and welcome to Why Golf, brought to you by Skyscanner. I'm Di Stewart and we're back for season two, chatting about one of the greatest sports on the planet, if not the greatest. Now, if you're new to the podcast, then we have some really good news for you. There are so many great chats to listen to back on series one with the likes of Hollywood superstar Jamie Dornan, major winners Rory McIlroy, Padraig Harrington, John Rahm, and equestrian royalty Zara Tyndall. Make sure you check out those on your favourite podcast provider on Instagram by searching This Is Why Golf and on our Why Golf podcast YouTube channel. I literally cannot tell you how excited I am about our next guest. She is a whirlwind of energy and activity and has achieved so much in her career, still so much to do. Molly Markou-Souman is the Commissioner of the Ladies Professional Golf Association. We are absolutely delighted to have you on, Molly. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I just want to tell our listeners and our viewers who watch this a little bit about you. You started your journey at Princeton University. You played soccer, ice hockey. You became a leader across the industry. You had a stint as Director of Athletics back at Princeton. Can you tell us, Molly, your first encounter with golf? Where did it start?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. You know, I my family, we were not golfers. My parents didn't play golf. Golf wasn't really part of our world. But I was a super passionate athlete from the minute I realized what sports were. And I had an older brother and we lived in a small town in upstate New York. And he came home one day saying, you know, I played golf today. And I was like, what is golf? The only golf I'd really seen was on TV, and I was interested in it. So I convinced him to let me tag along down to our public golf course in downtown Ithaca. And I just became sort of obsessed and extremely interested in it as a sport, as a challenge, as a social endeavor. I also really did watch the LPGA. You know, I think that was really the only women's sport that was on TV. I think tennis and golf were the only opportunity that I had to see role models playing sports and doing it at a high level where people care and people were interested. There were crowds there. So I was really, I didn't even really realize that as a young kid, but I was really interested in it sociologically. So I started playing golf at 12 at a public golf course in upstate New York. And golf's always been just a part of my life since that moment. I think it's come back in many different forms and fashions. Never really did I dream that I would be doing what I'm doing now. But, you know, so golf has played a really big role in my life personally and professionally since I was 12 years old, playing at the Newman Golf Course for literally, you'll love this, Di, but $45 for the entire season to be a junior member of this public golf course. And my dad would drop me off at 8 a.m, pick me up at 5 p.m. And sometimes I'd play 9 holes. Sometimes I'd play 54 holes. Sometimes I'd just chip and putt all day and play with my friends at the golf course. But so it was a big part of my childhood, and it's obviously a big part of my life now.
We hear that so many times on Why Golf. You get dropped off early in the morning until, you know, late at night or in the evening. And just having that community feel at a golf course and people coming together and playing a sport. I mean, sport changes lives, basically, doesn't it, Molly?
Every day. And I think that I learned so much about myself as an athlete, as a young woman who needed to learn how to be respectful to the people that I was playing with, how to behave around a golf course. And again, at a municipal course, there were just people from all walks of life playing there. And I had to figure out how to play with older people, with kids, with women. I played in a women's league when I was 12 or 13 as the only young girl playing, and how to engage and be a part of a community that was kind of outside the norm for a young 12 or 13 year old girl to be a part of. So golf is really the great uniter. And it really, as I said, it's changed my life even before taking this job. In my career, I had opportunities that I never would have had because I played golf. I got to be able to play with my bosses at Chelsea Piers. They would invite me to events. They would invite me to play with them individually, which other people weren't being invited to do because they didn't play golf. And as a young woman, that's really unusual and different. And so I just really credit a lot of any success that I've had to having that first experience when I went to my parents and said, I need to get golf clubs, they said, okay, let's go look at this local garage sale. And they bought me some golf clubs from a garage sale. And then they would slowly, you know, bought me slightly nicer clubs and really supported my passion and my interest in the game.
Oh, that's so great. You have the drive and, you know, the determination to keep going with golf, because I see it quite a few times, Molly, that females may take up the game and because they're sort of friends aren't involved in the sport, they don't keep going. But if you've got that support network around you, I've got an 8-year-old daughter. She plays with her 3 8-year-old friends every Sunday morning, and they play 6 holes from the forward tees. And because her mates are there and she can see other girls doing it, she's really keen. And she watched a bit of the Solheim Cup on telly. We'll come on to the Solheim Cup, but she could see these incredible athletes and the role models. If you can see it, you can be it. And now she's constantly talking about golf, which I love. But you mentioned, I just want to touch on the corporate side of things. I was at a big corporate day yesterday, and a lot of women doing a short game clinic, not many playing 18 holes, but they were developing their skills. And I said, listen, if we can get at least 2 women involved in the 18 holes next year, we're winning. It's a success. Because as you say, so much happens on the golf course, you know, business deals, making those relationships for life, allowing you to travel the world and do things that you've never done before.
Yeah, it's a significant disadvantage in the business world if you don't play golf.
Yeah,
and I think
huge.
A lot of women are hesitant to try something new that's hard because they don't want to be embarrassed. They're not sure that they fit in. And our role at the LPGA, I mean, we're really passionate about this idea that we should be inspiring young girls and women through our platform, through our unique LPGA platform. So we have very specific programs. The LPGA USGA Girls Golf Program is amazing. We have over 600 sites around the world. And the idea is just what you said, making sure that girls are being taught the game at a very high level from LPGA teaching professionals who are the best in the business, but also in an environment that feels comfortable and feels fun and feels connected. So I think that's one big place that we really work on this. But we're also being a little more creative with it too and saying, okay, maybe girls want to try it when they're little. Maybe it's not a sport they want to continue when they're younger. We want to make sure they have those tools to be able to come back to it and to get women in the game at the right point. So we've done a lot of programs at the college level where you introduce college age women to the sport before they get out into the corporate world. We have this program, Grads to Golf, where we have a very specific curriculum. We go in and get young women comfortable with the game. So when they have that first job, they say, you know what, I do know how to hold a club. I do know how to behave at a golf course. I do know how the sport works. Yes, I'm going to take that invitation and I'm going to go out and be aggressive and confident that I can be a part of something that will be important to my career, but also will be really fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we can just enjoy, but is also really good for us.
Oh, do you know, that gets me so excited. It really does, because I know the benefits of being involved in the corporate world, being a female, being able to play golf and being part of that, of the scene. So yeah, I applaud you. That's amazing. How did you become LPGA commissioner?
That's a good question.
Well, obviously you're brilliant at your job, but how did you eventually get it?
Well, I was, you know, again, I was the athletic director at Princeton at that time when the job became available. And I loved my job at Princeton. I love Princeton. I love Princeton athletics. I learned a ton there. I am super passionate about the university and about the athletic program there. But I received a call from, you know, an executive search firm that said, listen, we're interviewing for the new commissioner of the LPGA. Is that something that you'd be interested in pursuing? And again, when you're busy doing something that you're passionate about, it's not something that you're thinking about. It wasn't something I searched out. But I brought it downstairs to my family and said, listen, I just got this really interesting email. What do you all think of it? And, you know, I had teenage children at the time, actually 1 12-year-old and 2 teenage girls. And my older daughter was going off to school, so it didn't affect her as much. But my middle daughter was like, yeah, we're not moving. We're not moving to Florida. You can take
really?
That job,
yeah.
Mom, but I'm staying here. But she was sort of kidding. But, you know, it's hard to move a family. It's hard to pick up something that you love. But I saw this as this just tremendously unique opportunity to move women's sports and women's golf forward, to be a part of the growth that I was seeing happening, but also knew was kind of right ahead of us. So sometimes in life, you take a big chance and a big risk and you do something that's hard because you believe in it and because you see the opportunity for, you know, the thing that you're most passionate about. So my family came together. We collectively decided that this was a good thing to do. My husband was extremely supportive of the move. And we packed up the kids and moved down to Florida. And we've been at it for close to 3 years now.
And they've forgiven you?
Yes, my daughter sometimes will remind me that I moved her when she was a junior in high school. She's doing extremely well now. She just finished her freshman year at Tufts. She's a fantastic student and a great kid. And she, you know, sometimes I'll just say, "You're welcome." She doesn't think that's that funny, but she had to, you know, that's a hard thing to do is pick up and move and start at a new school. And she, you know, it wasn't easy for her. My son was entering seventh grade, a little easier, but still hard to leave your friends. And I just feel like, again, they dug in, they knew it was going to be a little difficult, but pretty much by October, November of that first year, they had found their way. And I think it's always good to allow kids to have a little bit of discomfort and to figure out how to do hard things. And, you know, again, my daughter being in high school wasn't easy, but she just did phenomenally well at her new school and academically and really learned a lot about herself, I think, in that process, too.
Oh, really great to hear. That's great.
And my older daughter was again, she had graduated from high school and she was off to college. So actually she was off, she was doing a gap year before college, but so she didn't have to quite have that same move, but she was very supportive and has been super supportive. And, you know, they like their mom doing things that she cares about, I think is the big part of it.
I'm still sort of waiting for my 8-year-old to acknowledge anything I do at the moment, to be honest, Molly, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm finding at the moment, if I'm digressing slightly, but if I don't talk that much, she's more responsive to me, then she'll start telling me stories. It's all a psychology game with girls. My son's a lot more straightforward. What are the comparisons being director of athletics at Princeton to commissioner of the LPGA? Obviously, you're transferring your skills over, but are there any similarities?
I think there are a lot of similarities and a lot of similarities to what I was doing prior to being the athletic director. I mean, what I've always really done, or for the last at least, you know, almost 30 years, is lead a complex organization. And I'm a little bit of, you know, a jack of all trades and master of none, because I've been given these leadership opportunities at a pretty young age when maybe I didn't have all the direct experience in each of the areas, but to be able to, it's like being a coach of a team. You know, you're the one that needs to move the players into positions where they can perform at the highest level. And you want to make complicated things simple. A mentor of mine and one of my bosses at Chelsea Piers would always say that, you know, smart people make complicated things simple. And so I think those are some of the through lines between all of the jobs, is really listening to what the business needs, stepping back at 10,000 feet and saying, okay, this is really the only thing that I can do in the job is get these things done. And so this is my responsibility. I tend to get really deep in the weeds on the things to understand them, and then hopefully take a step out and start to be able to try to move the pieces around as much as possible. But I think that's the biggest commonality, is that you're taking a complex organization and you're trying to simplify it and get the biggest tasks done and try to get to growth and impact. My first career, you know, at Chelsea Piers, I worked for almost 20 years. We are a business. We were a sports business. And we were, you know, obviously we had a strong mission to be clean, safe, friendly, and fun, and provide athletic opportunities to New Yorkers and those up in the Fairfield County, Connecticut area. But it was a business. It's a for-profit business. You're trying to drive revenues. At Princeton, it was very mission-driven. We had to be commercially sound. We had to raise money. We had to, you know, have corporate sponsors. But largely it was, our mission was education through athletics and being competitively excellent, you know, winning games and educating our athletes through athletics. The LPGA is actually a combination of those two things. We are very much a mission-driven organization. It's a member organization. It's a 501c6. You know, we have a clear mission of being the leader in women's professional golf and using our platform to elevate, transform, and advance opportunities for our players, but also girls and women more broadly. But in order to hit that mission, we don't have an endowment. We don't have someone funding what we do. We have to be really commercially strong. So there's the sporting side of the business, and there's the commercial side of the business, and there's the mission side of the business. And I love the intersection of all of those things. It's really a combination of everything that I've done in my career. I love the business side. I love the commercial side. We have great opportunity. We've grown tremendously over the last few years. But I also really love the mission side and the sporting side. We are the leader in women's professional golf, and we've got to make sure we optimize all of that.
Wow, it's so important to blend all of them, and that the business strategy is so key, especially now. And we're really happy that recently we've seen that Skyscanner have announced they've been announced as global partner for the 2024 and 2026 Solheim Cup. You've alluded to the fact that these partnerships are so important. Just remind us why they are for the LPGA and for the Solheim Cup to grow and go from strength to strength.
Yeah, we are so grateful for Skyscanner for coming in and seeing the value in this partnership. I think it's they're very innovative and really support the mission that we're on here. Solheim and also Solheim Cup is, and all of our other global partners that you mentioned, I mean, Solheim Cup is a marquee event for us. This is where we're going to be able to get a tremendous amount of eyeballs on these remarkable women. And it's a really great competition. You know, it's fun. Team golf is fun. You're putting the best Americans versus the best Europeans in a format that's really compelling. But we couldn't do Solheim Cup, or we couldn't do the LPGA in the way we're doing it without corporate support. I think that is our entire driver of our business, is having partners who are like-minded, who see how aligning their brand with the oldest, longest standing women's professional sports league with golf as the platform is tremendously beneficial to their business. But they also see how we can sort of change the world. You know, we can inspire young girls through this platform. We can show people that if we can be successful in women's sports, that's kind of a big part of society that hasn't always been equitable. And if we can move closer towards that equity, we can do big things in the world. So I think we're in a prime position to be able to continue to grow the commercial side of our business, but we can't do it without a tremendous number of like-minded partners like Skyscanner, who say, like, I see the value in this for our business, and I also see the value in it for society.
Yeah, it's great to have that deal for 2024 and 2026, that commitment that they've shown. And I'm super excited about it. And as you say, just getting more eyeballs on the sport and inspiring more people. I've just got a couple of stats, actually, because I constantly read about the LPGA and what position it's in. It just feels like it's in such a great position right now. And I love the fact that events you have, we'll go on to the men's game in a moment, where it's, you know, things are a little bit fractured, but you've got the best players in the world, the best females playing week in, week out. And the story of Nelly Korda, I mean, that should be front page here. It's back page, but it should be front page as well. It's sensational. I mean, she's making history, isn't she, when she steps out onto the golf course. But these strong storylines of these female role models, that they're vital, aren't they, for people to read about and to really feel it, that something special is happening in the women's game. And also how they push themselves, the discipline that these athletes have is just sensational.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, people follow people. I think, you know, not a lot of people are waking up saying, a lot of people do actually say this. They say they love the LPGA and they love what we stand for. They love the history of the organization. But at the end of the day, you know, you follow people, you follow the success and the hardships and the trials and tribulations of athletes. Golf is really hard. And the amount of work that has to go into these athletes and their sort of honing their craft is remarkable. And they are the best in the world. That's what I always say. At the LPGA, we have the best players from around the world. It is truly a global tour. This isn't the best players that live in the United States or from the United States. It's the best players from all over the world. I think we have over 40 countries represented. When you add the LET and the Epson Tour into that, I think we have something like 50 countries represented among the three tours. So again, you're really taking the best in the world and bringing them together to compete every week, or, you know, most of the weeks during the year. That's pretty remarkable. I always say, when do you ever get the 100 best of anything in a room together? So I do think the storylines, Nelly's story this year has been unbelievable. She's one of the most remarkable athletes I've ever seen. Her athleticism, her poise, her strength, it's really inspiring. And she's great with kids. She's great with our partners. She's a great member of the tour. I think she's hitting it on all cylinders. And she's one of many who are doing that. I mean, we have great storylines brewing right now. Obviously, Rose winning last week against Madeline Sackstrom, who is an amazing member of the tour as well. People know how hard golf is, and to watch them perform in front of, you know, crowds that are, you know, it's really interested and dynamic, and seeing how they perform under that pressure doesn't happen in most places in the world. And so every week we've got the strength of field has been amazing, and we've been able to put the best in the world competing against each other. So we just need more eyeballs on these women. The product is really, really strong, and we need more eyeballs watching them, more eyeballs and more people knowing their stories, following them. And I think that kind of moves towards more commercial value. It gets to a tipping point where we can continue to grow. And we are growing, as you said. I mean, the stats are phenomenal in the last few years, and really over time, we've been growing substantially, but we're not at that tipping point yet.
I hear all the time in women's sport over here, one of the most popular female sports in the UK is netball. And it's so popular. Every girl plays it in school. It needs to go, it is going from strength to strength, but it's a case of getting women, boys, fathers, anybody watching in arenas and on television as well. So it's just getting that message out to try make that transference. And it's commercially, it could be huge. I'm again digressing, but I want to mention the personal stories that you spoke about and how important they are, because we do follow emotions. Tell us about the relationship with Hannah Kuma and what you're doing there for the athletes.
Yeah, again, it's all part of our overall strategy. We have a really clear, I think, commercial strategy to continue to grow the LPGA, to be able to, as I said, use that platform to elevate our athletes and also women and girls more broadly. And one of the big things is, how do we get more eyeballs on our athletes? How do we get people to know their stories? I think what women's sports recently, sort of the evolution and the growth of women's sports has shown very clearly in so many different areas, is it's not that people aren't interested in the product. It's that the product isn't readily available and isn't marketed in the same way that men's sports have been marketed. So we have a role and a responsibility in that. I think our broadcast partners have a role and responsibility in that. Our corporate partners have a role and responsibility. But, you know, as an athlete and as a coach, you always have to look internally and say, what can the LPGA do to elevate the platform of these athletes? So one of many of the programs and things that our phenomenal marketing team is working on is, you know, to say, okay, let's help our athletes build their individual brands. So we've hired Hannah Kuma, who is Naomi Osaka's production company. Obviously, they've done a great job elevating her brand. And we've said, okay, what are some creative ways we can do this? We are taking, you know, eight athletes and working on helping them promote themselves off the golf course. Obviously, the LPGA promotes them on the golf course, and we tell those stories of the sporting side of their lives and the golf side of their lives. But what are other ways that we can use the social media tools and other platforms that we have to get the world to know how special and unique our athletes are off the course? Some of the charitable work they're doing, some of their hobbies, some of their passions, just their personalities. So that's just one of many things that we're doing to try to promote our stars, because again, these are the best athletes in the world. They are remarkable women, and we just need the world to get to know them better.
Yeah, it is amazing how we consume content in such a different way now, especially youngsters. I mean, they don't tend to watch linear platforms now. It's all kind of YouTube or social media, maybe Instagram or Facebook and Twitter. So yeah, it's vital to fulfill those roles. You need a partnership like that to be able to do it and to reach more people. But I am fascinated by the consumption of media nowadays. We've got to keep up, haven't we, Molly? Keep up with the pace, because it's so quick and it's so changing all the time.
We need to be creative. And I think that's part of why women's sports, it's been challenging, because all these things take money. To grow a business, to reach your full potential as a business, you don't just wake up one day and say, we're gonna grow. You have to have capital. You have to have resources to do that. It's a bit of a chicken and egg, but you have to be on and have more viewers to have more commercial value and to be able to drive greater revenues. But in order to do that, you've got to, you know, be able to market it. You've got to be able to push it yourself too. So we're doing all of these things. We're trying to figure out what type of capital we have to be able to invest in ourselves. I believe very firmly that if you build it, they will come. You know, we just have to take that responsibility and be creative with it. So we're launching a new website this year, a new mobile app. We have many more people working on the marketing of the league. We have more content people, player content people. But we're also, you know, working with our corporate partners to have those resources to do those things, and thinking creatively about how we do it. The young people, as you know, from your daughter and from my kids, they consume media very differently than we did. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of different ways that we can look at that. We now look at not just our viewership numbers, which are vitally important. We look at, or really, we have a new partnership with SeatGeek, and we're being able to understand who our fans are better. We're being able to market to our fans better through that platform, know the demographics, know, you know, sort of ways that we can continue to build audience at the golf course and through our channels. But the other thing we look at is that full media consumption. It's not just how many people are watching the linear broadcasts or the streams. It's also how many people are engaging with our content in all of our platforms. And that's the number that we are looking at. And that number has grown so substantially over the last couple of years. At the Chevron Championship, we had a full media consumption number of over 26 million, wow, which is 26 million exposures, which is higher than what we had last year at Solheim Cup, which is huge for us to have the first major of the year have that type of engagement. Obviously, Nelly winning and her story and how inspiring she is was super helpful. But don't forget, we've got so many other athletes out there too. Lydia Ko is one win away from the Hall of Fame at 26 or 7 years old. Her career has been remarkable. She's also, I don't know if you know Lydia, but she is amazingly inspiring and so confident and so calm and just so kind and so committed to helping the LPGA grow. So there's all those stories that we just need to tell, and then we need to measure that engagement and get to that viral tipping point.
Yeah, it's I love what you're saying and I love what you're doing. It's brilliant. And Lydia, she's an amazing character, great ambassador. Look forward to seeing her in Scotland in August of this year for the AIG Women's Open. The purses on the LPGA, they're growing, Molly. It's great news. The LPGA prize funds have grown nearly 70% since 2021, with LPGA Tour players now competing for more than $120 million in total prize money throughout the 2024 season. That's absolutely fantastic. 35 events, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, 33 official events, 2 unofficial events. Going from, you know, playing for 70 million to playing to 120 million, that is the key metric from the LPGA Tour side that we look at. Our job is to provide opportunities to our athletes to make a living commensurate with their world-class talent. Last year, we had 3 players make over $3 million for the first time. We had 27 players make over $1 million. But we're still not there yet. If you think about the 100th best player in the world last year made $187,000, which is, you know, is not enough to be the 100th best player in the world. And to they have to pay probably $125,000-$150,000 to be out on the tour. We need the best athletes in the world to be making the money that, you know, again, they care about being successful. These are athletes. It's not all about the money. It's about their legacy. It's about competing. If you talk to every one of our athletes, they want to win. They would be playing for much less money, but because they're athletes and because that's what they're committed to. But our job is to make sure that they're compensated commensurate with that talent. And also our job is to strive towards pay equity. Sports are one of the last places in society where people are pretty comfortable with the idea that women are making far less than men doing the same thing. Clearly, it's our responsibility to make sure that commercial value is there for the partners. But again, I think it's not a function of the product. It's a function of the inputs, the resources that we have to market, the way we get eyeballs on the game. So, I think we're still striving towards much greater growth. The numbers have been phenomenal due to, you know, our partners. Our partners see the value in these women and they have increased the purse. Often, you know, I'd love to be able to take credit for that 70 million to the 120 million, but, and our team should take a lot of credit.
Well,
for
I'm going to give you a little bit of credit. Going to give you a little bit.
We could take a little bit here and there, but I think largely, to be perfectly honest, a lot of times it's the partner coming to us and saying, we're going to raise the prize fund this year. Well, there's so many examples of my, you know, Terry Duffy, the CEO of CME, last year said, we're going from 7 million to 11 million and it's the tour championship. So we're going to make the top prize $4 million because I want to show the world that the women should be playing for the first prize to be the same as what the men play for at the signature events and the major championships. And that was a really important thing for him as a leader to say, I'm going to push to this point and we're going to show the world that that's what the way this should go. But there's so many. Chevron last week, as you saw, I'm sure increased their number to 7.9 million from 5.1, which is a tremendous jump in purse. It was 3.2 when they took over just a couple of years ago. And now to be at 7.9 million as a purse is really phenomenal. So a lot of our partners, you've seen KPMG step up at the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. A couple of weeks ago, we had JM Eagle go to 3.75 million, which is the highest purse in women's golf outside of the Tour Championship and the majors. So the list goes on and on. Mizuho this week is playing for 3 million. So we've seen our partners step up and say, hey, we know the women deserve to be playing for this and we want to be a part of that growth. So we couldn't be more grateful for the support of all of our partners. And then you have a partner like Rolex, who's been with us for 45 plus years, 50 years, who've really been, I'm not sure the exact number, but it's multiple decades that Rolex has been a partner of the LPGA. And they keep asking, how can we do more? How can we support the LPGA with Solheim Cup, with our overall partnership? So there's a lot of that happening. Yeah. And we just couldn't be more grateful for that kind of support that we're getting.
That's simply brilliant. I mean, they're obviously, data is so important to be able to show all these partners and relationships the data of how many more people are watching and the trajectory is going in the right direction. So that influences your partners and commercial partners to actually want to do more and put more money in the pot, so to speak. Molly, you've been so informative. I'm very impressed with all the numbers and figures and stats. Well, obviously that's part of your job, but my goodness, it's very impressive. And I know that you've played a huge part in creating everything that's been going on over the last few years. Molly, we will be back with you very shortly. We're going to talk more about Solheim Cup and also put some clubhouse curveballs to you.
Okay, I'm ready.
The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Now, I end up traveling around the world quite a bit for golf, whether that's leisure to play at that special course or when I'm working, but travel planning can feel overwhelming and pretty stressful. There are so many options for flights, hotels, and cars. Which one is best for me? What is a great deal? Am I missing out on a great option? Right, okay, breathe. This is where Skyscanner comes in, making everything simple and easy. Skyscanner has been helping travellers for over 20 years, and because they are fellow travellers, they never pressure you to book or manipulate prices. And tools like Explore Everywhere or the new Savvy Search AI feature help you explore and find that perfect trip when you don't know where you want to go. I used them recently when I was looking to book a trip to Germany and was amazed with how quick and easy it was. I went to skyscanner.net, searched for my dates and airports, and found exactly what I was looking for with times and prices. And it was also easy to add hotel and car options to my trip too. So when you're booking your next adventure, whether that be to Augusta or Abu Dhabi, St Andrews or Spain, just head to skyscanner.net or download the Skyscanner app to start building your next dream trip away. Amazing deals for flights, hotels and car hire all in one place with one simple search. Skyscanner, proud partner of the Why Golf podcast.
Hello, Why Golf listeners. Emma Saunders here. If you're enjoying the latest episode, then you should also check out On Tour with Sport 24. Each week, I'm joined by my trusty TikToking traveling companion, Rob Adcock, as we explore sporting cities across the world. So whether you're looking for the best way to enjoy the Las Vegas Grand Prix, make the most of your day at Wimbledon, or find out about the history of some of the world's biggest football clubs like Real Madrid, this is the podcast for you. So listen to On Tour with Sport 24 via your favourite podcast provider.
This episode, we're chatting to LPGA Commissioner Molly Markou-Samaan. Molly, we've spoken about some of them already, but what are the biggest challenges facing the women's game at the moment?
It's how do we have the resources that we need to put the LPGA at the highest level and get more eyeballs on the sport. I think we're working on many other things, but I would say at the top priority is people should be knowing what we're doing on a week-to-week basis, and we should be front and center in the sports world and the sports community, and we're getting there, and there's been great interest, but I think that's a challenge. I think the other thing is we are a global tour. We are truly a global tour. We play in 15 different states in the U.S. and 10 different countries, and we have the best in the world coming from all over the world, which is great, but that's also challenging with a small team, and it's challenging for our athletes. It's not... you know, I think they love it and they're proud of the global nature of our tour. And that's been a big driving force of our success. But it is also challenging to do all of that really well with a small team. So we need more staff. I think we need more investment in the women's game. We need more partners like the ones that we currently have to step up and invest at the highest level so we can really grow this. But it's not an easy It's not an easy organization to run by any stretch because we have big goals. Not only do we run the LPGA Tour, we run the Epson Tour, we have a joint venture with the Ladies European Tour, but we also have a really vibrant, and this is all integrated into our mission, we have a very vibrant LPGA, USGA girls golf program, which I mentioned before. We have an amateur women's golf program, which is really important for us to grow the game and to build super fans around what we're doing. And we have amazing teaching professionals who are members of our organization, and we need to continue to promote them and give them a platform and allow them to reach their peak as well. So it's a complex organization with a small team. I think those are some of the challenges that we face. We have people who work for us, and I know it sounds maybe hyperbolic, but I'm a little prone to hyperbole. Generally, people will know, but you know, we have these superstars, superhuman staff that work round the clock because of the passion that they have for what we're doing, but they often wear a million different hats. We don't have redundancies in different areas. You know, we have teams that are traveling week to week to put on these tournaments, and everyone is just as important as the one before. So those are all things we're working on, is trying to build our infrastructure to be able to scale this more effectively. But, you know, I inherited an amazing culture. Mike Wan did a phenomenal job of building really great team and team culture, and to being strategic with how they ran the organization on a small budget. So we're just building on that. We're taking the baton and building from where, you know, many people for 70 plus years kind of did great work. And so I think those are some of the challenges, but we're working through it with some great partners who see the vision and see kind of what is possible.
See the vision. So important. Yeah, huge challenge, but you're doing brilliantly. One of the big stories from the last few months is the postponed vote on the merger between the LPGA and the LET Tour. Where are we with that at the moment? Can you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we have a great partnership with the LET, and we have for a number of years. And so we've just sort of taken a pause on that merger conversation to really get back to growing, not that we weren't growing both businesses, but we're still very aligned with them and we're working on what that next step will be. But no new news to share on that specifically. I think we're not, there's no issue there. It's a really good, positive relationship, and we're really looking forward to growing women's golf globally together. And I think that's really important. A fractured environment in professional sports is hard to manage. And I think the beauty of this partnership with the LET is that we're all aligned. We're a mission-driven organization trying to give opportunities to women golfers around the world.
You mentioned a fractured environment is hard to manage. The men's tour, obviously, you've got Liv coming in. Has that had an impact on the women's tour at all?
No, again, we're focused on us. We're focused on growing women's golf, and we know we've got this great opportunity to do that. I think, as we've said all along, it's really hard to have a fractured environment. And so we've been really working hard to not have that, to make sure that the best women in the world are playing against each other on a regular basis, and that we have clear pathways to that top. And again, I think the world really supports women's golf in a great way across the, you know, not just in the US, but across the whole world, and see the value of, you know, I think when you have the top players playing against each other all the time, it just helps create more value. So I think that's been really important to us.
And speaking about the top players playing with each other, against each other, the Solheim Cup, which we've touched on, is in America this year. Great that we've got a couple of years of Solheim Cups. It's brilliant. How excited are you about the next one?
Yeah, Solheim Cup, again, gives us this platform to bring in new fans. And we see it as a tentpole event. We see it as a place that we get new eyeballs, new fans with a really exciting format. Everybody loves playing for their country, rooting for their country or for their countries. And so having two Solheim Cups in 2 years is hard work for the teams. It's hard work for the Ladies European Tour run the event when it's in Europe, and then the LPGA runs it when it's in the United States. And so this year, being in the DC area and the Virginia, in Virginia at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Course in a tremendous market with really, really strong support from the members at RTJ, from the Virginia government, from, you know, the Virginia fans, and from the DC market, we think we're in a prime position to have it be one of the largest, if not the largest, women's sports event ever. I know you've been to Solheim Cup before. The energy that exists on that first tee and throughout the venue is really remarkable and super important to us. Obviously, the Solheim Cup family and Ping have been, the whole reason this exists. And so we couldn't be more grateful for that partnership. And that continues to grow. Again, I think we're in a really prime position to be able to take the Solheim Cup to whole new levels. We're hoping that this is the largest viewership that any women's sports events ever had. And the energy is just tremendous.
Oh, great news. Yeah, I loved it last year. I had a few jobs, but one of my jobs, Molly, was to announce the players onto the first tee. So I really didn't want to mess that up. Representing the United States of America is, and occasionally, Molly, I couldn't see the players come onto the tee and I had my piece of paper, but before you kind of panic slightly thinking, are they going to come on in the order they should come on? So I was slightly stressed. Is it Nelly Korda first or is it somebody else? But when I announced a player's name, the noise level on that amphitheatre of the first tee was just incredible. And we created a lot of digital content that went around the globe that millions of people saw, that you've got to create those new programmes. We did it at the Ryder Cup as well. But I loved all the European fans, the American fans. They were just all on the same page. And it's definitely going from strength to strength. And I hope the most amount of people watch it this year in America. I believe that you're wanting to explore changing the Solheim Cup draw rule, where the cup is retained if the scores are tied. Is that going to happen anytime soon?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, we were talking.
That's
about
huge news if you are.
We don't have anything to announce there. I think, we're just evaluating what's the right thing to do moving forward. But it's
a tough one, isn't it? It's really tough.
It's tough. I mean, yeah, you want to make sure that it's the most compelling and fair competition that it could possibly be. But everyone goes in knowing, like last year, everyone went in knowing, the U.S. went in knowing that they had to actually win, that a tie wasn't going to get the cup back for them. And so the rules of the game were clear when they started, and they knew they had to beat the Europeans to get it back. And that's been part of the history. It's always important in any kind of organization that you evaluate those things and say, okay, is that the right thing to do? Does that make sense moving forward? We never do any of those things without the players' feedback. They are critical to our organization, and we have a phenomenal group of, I mean, first of all, Stacey Lewis is just an amazing captain, and her doing it two years in a row. And Suzanne Pettersen is a dynamic, strong, wonderful leader. And so to have Suzanne against Stacey with the athletes that we have, I think the story is extremely compelling. I think the captains themselves are stories, and I think they're both doing a really phenomenal job. You know, and then we have, like we said, Skyscanner as a global partner, Hilton, Rolex, Ping, those are all companies that are digging in and trying to support that. But I think it's funny that you said you're nervous and your stomach's kind of turning and your heart's beating when you're announcing the players. Imagine being those players with, 10,000 fans really close to the tee box, screaming and yelling as you're trying to hit this tiny little golf ball. At a competition that really matters to you and matters to the LPGA and matters to women's sports. So I love that first tee experience. The music's pumping and the fans are cheering. There's, chanting going on. And so we're all a little, our stomachs are all moving a little bit at a fast pace when that's happening.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great. You know, and a lot of listeners to this podcast, we often have discussion about first tee nerves. And, I say to them, well, if you're at the Solheim Cup, it's nerves on a different level. If you're playing your local club, I hate to break the news to you, but no one really cares where your ball goes. So don't worry about what other people think. Just go and do your own job. But you could break down those first tee nerves. I mean, we could have a psychology discussion for 3 hours about that, couldn't we?
We could. And I think, again, that's part of where we started this conversation. When I was a young girl playing competitive golf, it was generally me and a field of boys. And you get to that first tee, and all eyeballs are on you, and they call your name. That is one of the more nerve-wracking experiences. It's not the same. Again, I played soccer and hockey at a high level and competitively. When that puck drops, your adrenaline's kicking in. It's not so technical, and you're just going off of your athleticism.
Yeah.
When you have to stand there, and those things have to go through your brain on that first tee, even when you know you're a 12-year-old young girl playing in a field of boys and a field of girls, whatever it is, your heart's racing, and I don't know how those women make contact with the ball in front of them.
To even get it off the tee in the way they hit it.
Yeah,
I totally agree. It's because it's such a stationary sport when it's not a reactionary sport. So it's all in the brain doing the overwork, isn't it? But
exactly,
that's why we try and encourage people to play golf.
You know, some of our women like to hear, they like to have the crowd keep screaming while they're hitting.
Yeah.
Because when
yeah.
it gets too silent, when there's so many people around that first tee and it's too quiet, I think their brains start to really move. So some of our athletes, you know, they raise their arms and they say, let's go, you know, keep the cheering going. And they want to hit through the noise, which is very unusual for golf also.
Don't want to think too much, do you?
Exactly.
Great stuff. Thanks, Molly. Just before we leave you, before Clubhouse Curveballs, just three questions there. Given you probably travel around the globe a lot, I know you do, what are your top travel tips, something that our listeners can remember next time they're about to set off on their trip?
Oh, boy. I mean, I have learned so much about the travel, and I will tell you that I did not do it very well in my first year. I think by the end of the year, I was just exhausted. And so I think that was actually a good experience to really see how much the players, you know, what kind of periodization they need in their schedule and how much rest they need and, you know, recovery that they need. Because I consider myself someone with like a high degree of energy and not needing a lot of sleep. And I couldn't think properly by the end of the first season. You know, I was just so exhausted having traveled to, I think, 30 different tournaments and all around the world. So my thing is to try to plan your sleep out, you know, to stay on, get on that right schedule that you're going to be on when you get there. So the long flights to Asia, for example, I try to plan when I would be sleeping when I get there. So if I'm on a plane, I think, okay, I would be going to bed at this time in Korea. Let me try to get sleep right then. So when I wake up, I've kind of caught up with my sleep. And doing the same when you come back this way is sort of sleep when I would be sleeping the next day in the US. So those are some of the things that I try to do, is just to get up, intentionally think about the sleep schedule.
That's really, really important. Do you know, one of my superpowers, Molly, is being able to sleep. If you ask me to sleep for 12 minutes, I could do it.
Wow.
I could fall asleep within 2 minutes. I put my little meditation up and I'm seriously gone. I don't know. It's like it's sort of a military superpower.
So, that is a superpower.
Thank you. I'm just applauding myself now. Okay. Clubhouse Curveballs. Our first one, Molly, for you is, what is your favorite golf course in the world to play, to visit?
That's too hard of a question.
I know.
Because I've visited some amazing, in this job, I've had the opportunity to play the best golf courses in the world. But I always, you know, this is going to sound really super sappy, and so, but I'm going to say it anyway, because there's too many great golf courses out there that I would be leaving one out. I like to play at our club out on Long Island. You know, when I met my husband, he belonged to the North Fork Country Club, which is a little club out on the eastern end of Long Island. And that's where we played together to start. And we played
I've played there.
You've played there?
I've played there, yes.
Really?
Because we've got some family in New York and I've played there once. Yeah, it was about 8 years ago.
Oh,
loved
wow.
It.
So that's where we
loved
taught our
it.
Kids to play golf. And so I just, we are, you know, we have a house out there and we like to just play in a comfortable setting with the family, with friends that we know. So I like playing there. But again, I've played some of the most remarkable, unbelievable golf courses that I pinch myself and say, how did I arrive here? How am I getting to play here? But I think when golf brings communities and families together, and so to me, I would say playing at the North Fork Country Club or playing up at the Newman Golf Course in Ithaca, because of the community connections, the family connections, and kind of, you know, the comfort level and the fun that I have there.
It's always great to walk into a clubhouse, which is what we're trying to promote here on Why Golf, of that community feel of seeing people that you know and you can have a chat with, have a coffee with, go and play a few holes, come back in and just feel good vibes about playing a sport. Our next question in Clubhouse Curveballs, when you're packing your bag to get ready for a round of golf, aside from your clubs, what is the one thing you never forget to put in your golf bag?
Chapstick.
Yeah.
And sunscreen.
Super top tips.
I'm very pale and I get a lot of sunburn and a lot of, you know, lip burn. So I make sure that I have my sunscreen and my chapstick in my bag.
Oh, 100%. I burnt my lips at the AIG Women's Open. We were doing radio around the course. And I was speaking to the No Laying Up guys the next day and I could hardly speak because my lips were so burnt. So thank you. You've reminded me to order some more. Finally, what's your drink of choice on the 19th hole?
Everybody knows who knows me that I have two drinks that are probably I need to manage a little bit better. One is I'm a big Dunkin' Donuts tea drinker. So I know it's a little unusual because you could get tea anywhere, but it's part of my regular daily routine is to.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually I found Dunkin' Donuts all over the world. You know, in Malaysia, there was a Dunkin' Donuts. In Korea, there's a Dunkin' Donuts at the airport. So I get just a very basic black tea. And so I'm always cold too. So I love a tea when I come off playing golf, but I also drink way too much Diet Coke. So that's something that I'm trying to avoid, drinking as many Diet Cokes as I do. So Dunkin' Donuts tea and Diet Coke are probably my drinks of choice. I need to drink more water.
Same. It's just a bit boring, isn't it? But it's so good for you. So next time I see you, I'll ask you if you drink more water. But you could be British, Molly, because we like our tea over here. So
yes, we know.
We'll make you a lovely cup of English breakfast tea one day. Thank you so much. Our final question is, why golf? In any capacity, why should people play, be involved? Why do you play golf? Why do you love this sport?
I mean, there's so many reasons and we've touched on so many of them, but there is no sport that I think challenges you personally in the same way. And you can do it for your entire life. So when you're a little kid to when you're an old person, you can keep trying to get better. And we all search for that sort of that perfect feeling when you hit a golf ball. So that's one. I think the community that golf brings and creates is like nothing else. So I always say sports build leaders and build community. And I think golf does that better than anyone. It builds the leader in you and the integrity that you requires, the hard work, the discipline, more than any sport. But it also builds community in a way that none other does for the individual participant. You know, we can play golf until we're 90 years old, which is very different than basketball or soccer or hockey. I still like to try to play hockey if I can, but I don't do it well and I don't do it often. But if you can play golf all the way up until the very end of your life. So I think building leaders and building community are why golf is so, so special.
Oh, a brilliant answer. Molly, thank you so much for your time. And you're an incredibly busy businesswoman. You're an athlete. You're a mum. You've got 8,000 other hats. So we do value your time. And thank you for coming on Why Golf.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Remember, if you like what you've heard, make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast provider and the next episode will drop into your feed automatically. We're also on Instagram, just search for This Is Why Golf, and on YouTube, search for Why Golf Podcast. To find out more of the most up-to-date insights and research, just head to thisiswhygolf.com, where there's lots more information on all the benefits that golf has to offer. We will be back on Monday the 10th of June with Super Bowl winner and NFL legend Victor Cruz. I cannot wait for that. The Why Golf Podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner. See you next time.